Africans at home and throughout the diaspora. Unity is strength. We've got the power.
Stop the fussing and the fighting. Now the time to do the right thing.
We do for unity. Come.
Stop the fussing and the fighting.
Yeah.
Now the time to do the right thing.
In the spirit of Umoja, embrace with love.
Yes, embrace with love. Isn't that what Bad Bunny told us to do during the Super Bowl? we just don't understand the power of love. This is Jamala Rogers, your host of Voices from the Battlefield, and we welcome you. We are still not in our studio, but Mr. Bernie Hayes has given me all kind of assurances that we'll be there soon, even sending photos. So I'm starting to get pumped up about that, getting back into the studio and being a part of the Black Radio Hall of Fame family, because when you're kind of out here hanging on your own, that's not how I operate. I'm part of community and part of family. So we're looking forward to that. But we are here, and you know, as the seven principles require of us, Kaumba, we're going to, you know, be creative about how we do this. We're going to be resourceful. And so here we are live streaming on my Facebook page. And after this program, you can find these programs on my website or my YouTube page. So if you missed it, or you kind of get in, or you try to listen at lunchtime and you had to go back to work, it's all good. You just won't see it live, but you can still see it. It's being preserved. But Voices from the Battlefield is uniting all these struggles that we have, both locally, nationally, and internationally, because why? We still have a madman in the White House. We still have a 34 count felon in the White House, and we have a pathological liar in the White House. And what we've been able to see is, once you connect with him, once you're affiliated with him, you become a pathological liar, because you have to lie on top of his lies. And so people across the globe are wondering, what are you people in the US gonna do about this menace to society? Because he is screwing up the world with his actions, his behavior, his policies. And I'm not just talking about the tariffs. This man has, you know, he's out of control. And these folks in Congress should have been put Amendment 25 into place, but they haven't. They're screwed. So it's up to the people. And you know, I've been saying on this show forever that we are the fourth branch of government. The people, because we can't, now we see, we can't depend on the executive branch, we can't depend on the legislative branch, we can't even depend on the courts. All of those folks are wrapped around him on bended knee, and so it really is up to us, and we got to do more, y'all. This is fine. We've been creative about like stopping stuff or slowing it down, but now we need to get a bit more strategic about how we start to put some stop gaps on this man, because he's totally out of control. But you know, you all proved at the box office that you didn't like Melania. That bombed. Not only did it bomb, some of y'all started this reviving the whole Michelle Obama documentary, and people kept sending stuff like, go to, you know, start seeing Michelle on Netflix. I'm like, that sounds familiar. And I looked and it was 2020. I'm like, I saw that already, but okay, I'll see it again if that means I'm gonna be part of this national thing. And I think based on that, Becoming got moved up on Netflix, I think, to like, you know, 5 or 6. So it really did outpace Melania, which they had dumped $75 million in there. That's your friend Bezos did that. And the International Movie Database, which is what kind of ranks some of these movies, said it was the lowest rating in their history. So that's pretty bad, but you know, y'all didn't want to see it and y'all showed it, and it's all good. And then in New York, they did something even more spectacular. They were taking down the advertisements, which are at the bus stops, and doing a little revamping of it, sometimes taking the whole thing out and putting it back in. And it wasn't nice what was being said about your president. So all of that is part of the resistance, y'all. So whatever you're doing, you know, we used to laugh at the Palestinians throwing rocks. It's an act of resistance. And whatever you're doing is showing them that you will not be dominated. You don't like what's going on, and you're going to do whatever's in your power to resist. And so right now, it's a lot of resistance going on. It's stressful because we don't know how all this is going to end. But I think we as a people have a say and a vision about how it could end. But we got to get organized, y'all. So this is Black History Month. And one of the things I encourage people to do is go somewhere, read something, see something about Black history. And depending on what your schedule is, try to learn something new every day or every week or every month about Black history. And this is the thing that I like about Black History Month, is because people are digging and uncovering new things all the time. And then it pops up during Black History Month. You're like, oh, I know about that, but I didn't know about this. So this past weekend, I went to the Zucca Arts Guild program over there in Old North St. Louis, and it was about unsung heroes. And somebody had done a painting of a person called Bass Reeves. Now, I thought I knew about all the Black cowboys because we take our young people to the Bill Pickett rodeo every year. But there was somebody called Bass Reeves. This was a bad brother, probably one of the first, I think, deputies or something out there out west. He was an enslaved person coming from Arkansas. Because he was enslaved, he ended up hiding amongst the Native Americans. So he learned like 4 or 5 different languages: Choctaw, you know, he was illiterate, and he learned how to speak, and they taught him how to scout. They taught him all of these things about the terrain. He was a bad motor scooter, but he also took his job seriously. And come to find out, they meaning the white powers to be, used Bass Reeves as the, how should I say this, as the impetus for a Long Ranger. Now, some of you all might be too young to know about the Long Rangers, but if you watch TV in the 50s, maybe even the 60s, you know about Long Ranger and Tonto. That man was fashioned after Bass Reeves, a Black man, a Black lawman. So who knew? Who knew? So that was my new thing that I learned by going to that event, was about Bass Reeves. This brother was so principled about the law, he arrested his own son for committing a murder. So he took his job very, very seriously. So Bass Reeves is my new favorite unsung person who used his skills to keep the thuggery down there in the West. So, but there's lots of things going on in the city, y'all, about Black History Month. And some of that I'll talk about later on when we get to the announcements parts. But yeah, it's some good stuff going on. And it's important now that we know it, because you got the man in the White House who, and I'm not gonna say a whole lot about the Epstein files, y'all, but I think we are on the cusp of seeing the exposing of one of the largest, widest pedophile rings in the history of this world. The reason they're doing a drip drip because they know how powerful the discovery is in those files, and some of what has already come out is enough for me. And I would say don't always go to the regular internet to get like pieces of it. Try to go to a source who's been trusted, because some of the photos, you know, they say a photo is worth 1,000 words. They truly are. So you don't need a whole lot of context for it. And I'm telling y'all, it's bad. It's really bad. You know, it's pretty bad when the king and queen over in England say to the prince, like, you can't be with us. This stuff you done, you cannot be with us. You cannot be in the family with this crap. So they taking it seriously, but we're not taking it quite as seriously here, because somebody needs not to be in office right now. And a lot of these people are. But what I was going to say is, because he is dismantling Black history, Black culture, Black achievements, we have to be up on what that means and what it is, because if something is happening and we don't even know that's affecting us, then we can't defend it. But he's slashing and burning, banned books, you name it, he's doing all of that. And so it's up to us to raise the resistance. We know that culture is an important act of resistance, always has been, particularly in the Black community. So I am delighted to be able to introduce our guest today is Heather Bia Himes. And this is just about one of the most talented sisters that you're gonna ever meet. She is a dancer, she's a choreographer, she's an actress, she's a director, a curator. I mean, she does it all in terms of the culture aspect of it. And I was gonna jokingly say, tell us about the Dunham techniques, because she's a certified, and you gotta be special, y'all, to be a certified instructor in the Dunham technique, because it's a special technique and everybody doesn't know how to do it, even though they think they do. But I just wanna welcome you, Heather, to Voices from the Battlefield.
Thank you so much. I'm excited to be here. So honored to be invited. So I'm so excited to be here and share with you about the Black Rep and our upcoming production.
Yeah, and I think that I know you felt this way because I saw it, that the Bad Bunny Super Bowl halftime, you said you felt like you were Puerto Rican.
I said, I'm like a worker.
Yeah, because it was so inviting, which is what culture is supposed to do, it's supposed to invite you in. I didn't feel alienated at all, even though I didn't understand what was being said. I mean, I was right there with it. I was in it. And I'm thinking, where's the after party? I want to be invited.
So. Right. I felt, so much I actually energy. Felt a part of it. I saw the diaspora. I was familiar with the movement. It felt like I could be up there doing those steps. I heard the drums. I saw the dancing. I saw the dominoes. I was like, oh, this is Black.
Yeah. So I it was not alienating for me at all. Like I said, I couldn't understand a word, a few words, but it was the energy was so powerful. The images were so powerful. And I had to go back to some of my Puerto Rican friends to say, okay, now I know that meant something. You know how we had to decode last year's
Kendrick Lamar's, right?
Yeah, Kendrick's thing, because these performers like them are so genius. They got all kind of symmetry and symbolism embedded in there. You got to go a little deeper. It's not just like you enjoying it. Like, okay, what does that mean? Like the stuff about the bodegas, you know, what comes out of New York. I got that, but I don't think that people got like the sugar cane. And the fact that they were real people in those grasses, that was part of when they were bringing slaves to Puerto Rico. That was the main crop. But he had so much in there. He just put it all in there. When I was looking at it and looking at some of the responses on the internet, most of the Latino folks, particularly in diaspora, was really just beside themselves with joy that he included their culture in there. And so that's how important culture is. And for the Black Rep, who's been with us almost 50 years, bringing us at least the performing arts part of it in ways that I think this community has never, let me just, this ain't you saying it, this is me, in ways that this community has never fully supported. Because I do believe that, you know, it should be standing room only in the aisles, and that fire marshals, you know, every performer should be a sold out performance, because that's how good it is and that's how important it is to our community. So, you know, going from Benito Ocasio to the Black Rep, tell us a little bit about how the Black Rep started, what you all have been doing for 49 seasons, and how and then we're going to move to Ladies Night and what that means.
Okay. So the Black Rep was founded in 1976 by Ron Himes and a group of his fellow college students at Washington University in St. Louis, particularly out of a need for a space for Black people to be able to perform. The folklore goes that Ron auditioned for a show at the performing arts department, in the performing arts department at WashU, and he got cast. But because he was black, and the woman playing opposite him was a white woman, he couldn't, that wasn't going to be acceptable at the time. So he decided that, you know, we're students here, we pay tuition, we should have access to the facilities like any other student group does. And they started, the Black Rep started as the Phoenix Rising Theater Troupe as a student group at Washington University. And then from there, it grew into a theater company, which started at St. Louis Avenue in the church, which it, they called it the Miracle on 23rd Street. And it grew, moved from there to Grandale Square, where I was at the Grandale Theater for over 20 years. And now we have come back, a little bit of a circle moment, to Washington University, where we perform at the Edison Theater on campus. And it really is, I grew up being one of my main career goals to be able to be on the Black Rep stage. All of my the teachers that I grew up looking up to, Doris Bennett Glasper, Theodore Jameson, all of those teachers were performing on the Black Rep stage. So it really was for me Broadway, something that was attainable, but it was also someplace where I could see people who look like me and told the stories that I really, really connected to. Everybody sang very well. Everybody danced very well. The acting was brilliant. The costumes were beautiful. The set is beautiful. The audience is all black. And it's a moment where you feel safe in a black space watching black entertainment. A lot of times when we see, you'll go to, you know, you'll see a black show, but, you know, being in a mostly white space, even though you're seeing a black show, it doesn't feel as comfortable, because you're not surrounded by blackness. And so that is the beauty for me of the Black Rep, to have just this environment that is made by us and for us, and continues to perpetuate that those stories, and telling new stories and old stories. So
And I
I love
know
it.
that you got your fine arts degree from WashU. When you were going there, were you already involved with the Black Rep, or you were becoming involved with the Black
Oh.
Rep? 'Cause why did you go into dance anyway? Well,
Oh, so I've been dancing since I was about 5 years old, down at the Kathryn Dunham Museum Children's Workshop in East St. Louis, Illinois, under the direction of Ruby Street. I've been dancing, and I've been in the arts. That's all I ever, I didn't have, that was it for me. So I went to, I got my first show that I did at the Black Rep was Raisin, the musical, which we just brought back at the beginning of this season. So that was really funny. But the first show I did was Raisin at the Black Rep, and then my next production was Tell Me Something Good. And so I did Tell Me Something Good, and that was it for me. Once I did Tell Me Something Good, I knew that the Black Rep was a space that I could be creative and would can also grow, right, as an artist. So then I went to Columbia College Chicago, and that's where I got my undergrad degree. And in undergrad, I was still coming back to St. Louis to do professional productions. In the summer, I would come. I did Dream Girls, Guys and Dolls, tons of productions at the Black Rep while I was in college. And then I got my master's at Washington University in 2018. And by the time I had started my master's degree, I had worked several positions: tour company manager, box off director of box office, company management, choreographed several shows, acted in my first main stage production, and danced in several productions. So I knew by the time I was at WashU, I already had known that the Black Rep was my theater home. And what was very interesting is, as a student at WashU, I could still see some of the issues that Ron had encountered when he was an undergrad at WashU in the 70s, right? And so
yeah,
that
some
is
almost
still
40
happening.
years later. Yeah.
Exactly. So, you know, that behavior in and now I'm a PhD student at the Ohio State University. and still seeing that same type of behavior that is still in the academy today, even in like a PhD program, right? And so the need, so it just reminds me and kind of solidifies for me that the need for spaces for us, by us, made by us, continue for us, is needed. We need Black spaces.
And Heather, that's why this is part of the battlefield. Because people say, well, how could that be a battlefield? Because they think of political, but culture is also a battlefield. And when people understand the power of culture. So I'm not really that surprised that those issues are still going on like some 40, 50, 60 years later. I'm just wondering, we know that the infrastructure is tinged with racism and misogyny and even some homophobia. What was it like growing up and wanting to be a dancer? Did you have people saying, well, that's good, child, but you need to get you a real job?
Actually, I really didn't. Me and my best friend were talking about this recently. We grew up with Katherine Dunham. So the blueprint was laid. We already knew we could be successful as artists and scholars. We knew that it was possible to do both and that you didn't have to choose one or the other. My mother, my entire family was 110% behind me being a dancer and never ever suggested or insinuated that I needed a backup plan. I knew, and in St. Louis, it's a bustling arts community. It's so rich. It's so many places that you can work as a Black artist. So I didn't have that. I never had pushback about having a successful career as a dancer. I was encouraged to be multifaceted in my dance, right? So you need to dance, you need to choreograph, you need to be able to teach. You need to be Miss Street's famous words, or we don't have any dumb dancers around here. So I needed to make sure that I invested in my studies, but that was just to help support my artistic career and not to have a backup plan in case my artistic career did not work out. And so she made sure that we knew how to, I was teaching dance classes when I was 14 years old. We had the big kids have to teach the little kids, and she taught us how to teach. That was part of the curriculum. And Ms. Dunham made sure that we knew how to teach. We were tested by her as well. So it was just, it was a well-rounded program to teach us how to be successful artists, because she knew that that's what we wanted to be in. And also everybody in the program was not made to feel like they had to be professional artists. The program was about teaching us how to be good citizens of the world, right? So what can you do to make sure that you're a good person in the world and have a good work ethic and be committed to whatever it is that you're going to do? If you're going to be the janitor, be the best janitor you can be. And so that was the foundation of our training.
And that sounds pretty apropos for a Katherine Dunham, who was a citizen of the world. And when I think about her, I think people like me and you understand her importance to culture, but she still seems to me to be an unsung hero in this region. I don't know that many people know who Katherine Dunham is and what she gave to the world. So talk about the Dunham technique, because that's a special kind of thing. And then I want to see if I've been doing it right. I'm joking. I'm joking. I watch other people do the technique. So what's so special about the Dunham technique?
So Miss, the thing that makes Dunham technique more unique than anything, any other dance technique, is that Miss Dunham was also a scholar and an anthropologist. So one of the founders of American modern dance as we see it today. So we think about her colleagues who are, some would argue are more well-known than she is. Martha Graham, Isadora Duncan, those women, Jose Limon, or Lester Horton, if you will, whose technique is what the Alvin Ailey American Dance Theater, they use that technique as the foundation. But Ms. Dunham, what Ms. Dunham did as an anthropologist is that she traveled to Haiti in the 30s and she studied Haitian dance, Haitian culture, and became initiated in Vodou. And so through that, she really, so a lot of times as anthropologists, they operate on the insider-outsider model, where especially during the 30s, it was something that was called like armchair anthropologists, right? Where they would sit and they would watch and not become involved or invested and just kind of observe. And because most of those people were white men, they also were racist and labeling cultures as other, uncivilized, savage, and whatnot. Ms. Dunham's difference is that she went and she transitioned from an outsider to an insider because she became initiated in a Vodou religion. So she studied and she was there for almost a year, and she studied Haitian culture. She learned the dances, she learned the language, she ate the food, she stayed with the people, fell in love with the people fell in love with her. And when she returned back to the States, she was a student at the University of Chicago, it was time for her to write her ethnography. And Ms. Dunham just wasn't about that at that moment. She realized that, you know, how old she was at a, you know, she was young enough to still be performing. And she decided instead of writing her ethnography, she would like to perform her ethnography. So Ms. Dunham presented what we have is like the first dance ethnography or performance ethnography, where she took the movements and the rituals and culture, dances and movements that she saw in the with the people of Haiti, and brought that to the concert stage. And she expanded and she exaggerated things so that it was more theatrical than the movements were in their actual religious or secular social context. And so from her choreography, that is a lot of it is based on ritual, she saw that there was a need for a movement vocabulary so that she could teach the dancers how to perform these movements, right? Because a lot of the dancers were only trained in ballet technique or modern dance technique. Africanist movement wasn't much of a practice that was taught widespread in America specifically in the early 30s or mid 30s. So Ms. Dunham created her dance technique, Dunham technique, as a way, as a tool to teach dancers her choreography. So, you know, if I'm going to teach this big step, I have to break it down into these smaller steps. And that's where the codified technique comes from. So Dunham technique is a series of movements that utilizes modern dance, ballet, West African and Caribbean dance techniques and merges them together into a physical practice. But we also incorporate the mind and the spirit in the dance. So the Dunham technique is not just something that you can just perform. It really is, as we say, as Dunham practitioners, a way of life. So we study. I'm a lifelong student of Dunham technique. That's what my PhD research is focused on. So really thinking about the movement practices critically and examining them from all sides. And then also it's how I live by the Dunham philosophies and theories. I try to make that a way that I approach life, I approach relationships, just in a constant state of self-examination and self-evaluation, and in a constant state of learning and learning and interacting with people.
So I think it was important to hear that, because oftentimes I think when people go to a performance, they see dance, they don't realize all the layers behind that. I mean, they just think it's moving your body and that the choreography is just rooted in steps and movement. But really, when you understand it as a philosophy, it takes on a whole different meaning, at least for me. And then for something like the Dunham technique, you reminded me that she was an anthropologist, which is a very unusual for Black people of that generation. But I think part of being an anthropologist is that you're trying to preserve the culture in a way that people will understand it for generations to come. And so it is a different responsibility it's not just like I want to perform the dance and I'm going to videotape it so other people know how to do the dance. It's like, why are we doing this dance, or why are we doing it this particular way, and why are the folks who are students of Dunham all seem to be not like a cult, but moving through life in a similar way in terms of, like you said, you it's a lifestyle. And so I think it's important for people to know about the Dunham Technique. I wish we could talk a little bit about the Dunham Museum, because I know that that's had some challenges, but you know, again, that's on us to make sure our heroes and sheroes are preserved in the literature, but also the institutions themselves. You mentioned the robust explosion of theater in St. Louis, and I really do believe a lot of that is based on the Black Rep. And so when I look at, for example, Call to Conscience, Black Bread and Roses. I see all these other folks who are doing stuff, and some of them actually have performed with the Black Rep, but there is, to me, a good deal of variety in that artistic way. And some people might say, oh, there's not enough interest in the arts for all of these folks. I don't believe that. I think there is. And I just look at what I think the inspiration that the Black Rep has brought to this community, but also to the artistic community, and specifically the theatrical experiences. So you all have been doing this for a while. Do you have a favorite production? Because when you mention Tell Me Something Good, that's my all-time favorite, man. I really love that. We can't say, gotta do that again, you gotta do that again. But
I'm working on it, child. I'm working on it. I'm trying to convince them. write letters, call them. Tell them.
Yeah, and I know you gotta have a number of folks who can do both the dance and the singing. That's always a challenge, I got to believe. But what are some of the other performers you think, man, this did it? I know this is another thing that we haven't talked about, that the Black Rep has done all of the series of the August Wilson. Yes. I don't know if any other theater group has done that, but that's the way, that's the beauty of being a subscriber, because I got to see all of it, maybe not in sequence, but I got to see all of the August Wilson plays. So to me, that's a definitely plus on you all.
Yeah, so we have done the August Wilson Century Cycle. We've completed it in the order that it was written. And now we are cycling back through and doing it in chronological order. And Ron Himes has been able to do direct, act, and produce in all 10 productions. And so that is that's one of his career highlights, is that because he's dedicated, very, very dedicated to the work of August Wilson and making sure that it's done at a Black theater company and by Black people. So that is, we love August Wilson. I think my favorite August Wilson production would have been Gem of the Ocean, where the late, great Linda Kennedy played Aunt Esther, which was one of the most incredible performances I had ever seen, and to watch her transform like that. That's the thing I love about theater, is watching people who I know transform into these different people on stage. It's a really magical thing to witness. My favorite production is Tell Me Something Good, the same as many of our subscribers. I also love Dream Girls was a really good Dream Girls.
Yeah.
I'm a musical theater girl, so I love The Wiz. Our Wiz was really, really good. It was actually the last production we did in the Grandale before we moved out. And so it's just, you know, real nostalgic for me as well. That would be like my top three. Oh, Serafina.
I forgot about Serafina. Yeah,
Serafina was Chef's. That was an excellent, excellent production as well, especially because it was pretty much all local and children that had been trained by Linda Kennedy and by Ron and the Summer Performing Arts Program. And so to see the, you know, these kids being able to move from, you know, students to performers was really incredible thing to
Yeah.
witness as well. So
Well,
yeah, those are my
those
thoughts.
widows on the street, what is it, Mary Street? That was hilarious.
Widow's role was very funny.
Widow's Row. I mean, our crew over there on my side, we were laughing so hard. We missed some of the lines afterwards. We were like just
Yeah.
falling out laughing. That was hilarious. But yeah, and also always to see Denise Times on stage, you know, is always a treat. It's always
Yes,
a treat. So, but I still I remember going over to when you were over there on 25th Street off of St. Louis Avenue. The organization has for Black Struggle has a picture because back then, part of a fundraiser, what you could do is you could pick a night and you sold tickets. And then I think we split it with the Black Rep. And so we got pictures of all our people filling up the seats. And like you said, it was all Black. That would be very different now because it's more of an integrated crowd. But to be in that theater and to be supporting a you know a Black institution like that, we're gonna like put that, and we just kind of did this as we were doing our 45th commemorative newsletter. And it's not a good picture, so it couldn't go in there, but we still like look at that picture because some of the folks that even our members are no longer with us, so it has even more meaning. But to have moved from 25th Street, we always knew that that was you were getting bigger and better, and that you were going to new heights. But I just look at where you all have come, and try to get people as excited as I am about the Black Rep. And I know you all have done all kind of promotionals, really, you know, to get people into the seats. And I know, you know, Ron and I have talked about it. What is it about theater that Black people don't think they should be there? And so I think part of that is this, you know, dismantling that mythology about like it's only for rich people or whatever, because it's not. And this is about us. So what else can we do? I'm always coming up with ideas. Ron, what about this? What about that? And we've been talking about Ron, but one of the things in your introduction, I forgot to say you're a life partner, the wife of Ron Himes, and you're also the mother of two beautiful children. So those are two important roles. But so Ron is like the founder, and I'm sure there's lots of discussion about the theater in y'all's household. But what kinds of things do you think are the barriers to people coming out? Because it's not the price. Because I've seen people pay big time money for some of these other things. So what is it? Is about this whole notion that only theater is for white people? Do you think that's the
Think so because you know we saw Hell's Kitchen, we saw The Wiz at the Fox, Tyler Perry has lines around the corner. I don't think that I don't think that that's the issue. I don't know what the I'm not sure, you know, 100% what the issue is. I will say that I think it's generational. I think it's important for you know, one of the things that we notice when we go to the Muni is that Muni subscribers pass their subscriptions down in their family. We'll be sitting next to someone and they'll say, "Oh, we've had these seats since my great grandmother started subscribing at the Muni," right? And so I think it's about making sure that we are bringing the younger generation along with us. And you know, each generation has a shorter and shorter attention span. And so it's especially for straight plays, right? Musicals, some people it's easier for musicals, the singing and the dancing, or you know, I don't use that word, the comedy in some of the other productions. The production value, are these other productions that they have, and the bells and whistles that the Black Rep doesn't have, but we make up, I think, in raw talent and the commitment to storytelling. Ron has a commitment to enriching, uplifting, and educating the audience, and sometimes that means sitting through a difficult production, right? It's not going to be a production that is, each production isn't going to be full of laughter and full of song.
Like an Oedipus or Waiting for Godot.
Yeah, yes. some productions are, I think, more difficult to sit through, but he doesn't pick, he only picks five shows a season. So so that a lot of detail and thought goes into what five shows does the St. Louis community, specifically the Black St. Louis community, need to see. How can I make sure that women are being uplifted and represented and heard? How can I be sure that there is diversity, right? Do we hear, we have stories about, he did one show, I can't think of the name, but it was about one of the first story about the AIDS epidemic. So he's making sure that we are uplifting
the long way home. Yeah, I remember that.
Yeah. And so he had, so every show isn't going to be super entertaining, right? But there is always a point. You're going to leave the theater with a powerful message, regardless of whatever show you come to see. And so I think that it's important that we're bringing our children, that we're bringing our grandchildren, that we're bringing our girlfriends we're bringing the seniors. We're making sure that we have, that we are accessible to seniors and that we are getting them there if they want to see it. How can I take my grandma to see the show? How can I sit with her to watch this production? We do intergenerational matinees on Wednesday mornings. We had one this morning. And it's incredible to have a theater of high schoolers and several groups of seniors. It's so much self-regulation that happens. A lot of times when we only had students, they would get loud and raucous. But because now it's an intergenerational matinee, they behave in a completely different way, knowing that there is a group of senior citizens sitting behind them. And they
respect
are watching
your
them.
Elders. Yes.
Right.
Yes.
They're respect and they're learning to respect their elders. Right. Yeah. And so it's not just the teachers telling them to behave a certain way. Their friends whose elders are in their life, right? I've seen other kids check other kids and, hey, you want to see this lady behind you? Watch how you're talking. Say excuse me. And so I think that that's a unique experience that we need to make sure is continuing. And I think it's important that we take time to disconnect from our phones. And it's, you got two and a half hours, sometimes three, depending on if it's an August Wilson production or not. And we're telling you, we're not asking you, we're telling you, you have to turn your phone off and you have to be engaged here with us. It is my prayer and my hope that, because it's not just the Black rep that is suffering from a lack of butts and seats. Theater in general is taking a hard hit, especially after the pandemic. The pandemic offered an opportunity for people to just be at home and be entertained by their various streaming services. And I think people settled into that a little bit. And now we're trying to ask them and implore them to return back to a communal shared space where we can experience this magic together. And I think that we just, we need patience for our audience to let them know that it's safe to return to us. And we ask that that our audience also have patience with us as we navigate the various, because sometimes, one night we'll have 300 people and then the very next day it'll be seven people in the audience. And so as we navigate the highs and lows of that, we just need to, remember that we're in this together and that there's always something in our season for you. Our current production is The Black Feminist Guide to the Human Body. It's a love letter to Black women. It's a play where it's more of a choreo poem. If we're thinking in the more along the lines of Ntozake Shange and For Color Girls, it's a combination where dance and music and poetry all kind of meet together into this one beautiful embrace. And it is for every, it was all women-led production, mostly Black women, but definitely all women of color. and the leader in leadership, from the lights and the costumes to the props to the choreography, the director, the playwright. And it's just a space for Black women to be heard, to be seen, to see themselves, to witness themselves, a safe space for us to have an honest moment and communicate with each other. It's very interactive. And Friday we have Ladies Night, where it's Galentine's Day. We have a sweetheart is going to be in the building. We have some drinks and some vendors there for us to have a little community before the production, and then all go to the theater and just love on each other. You know what I mean? Like Ntozake say, yeah. I found God in myself. And so
right, exactly.
That's what we're really leaning into with this production. And it's nice and small and intimate. And it's a good time. I love, it's a Soul Train line that might pop up. You know, you might hear a little bit Juvenile, back that thing up. So it's a good time.
So the Ladies Night is a little teaser before people go to the theater. So if you have a ticket to the theater, that automatically gets you into Ladies Night. What if you just want to do Ladies Night?
If you just want to do Ladies Night, you can come hang out with us.
Okay.
Come have a little sweetheart and, you know, support the vendors that will be on site, and have community with the women who are there. And then, you know, go on and get into something else.
Yeah. So I know that one of the things that's different that you all try to do with this production is to have the post-production discussion. And so you're doing the one on that Friday, right?
Yes. Yes. So I'm leading the post-show discussion on Friday.
Do we now have one for every production? I know I'm doing the post-production discussion on February 28th, but in between then, that's almost the last week, I think.
So we almost have every night filled, where there will be a Black woman in leadership, or expert, or a witness of some area who will be leading the production, because the production is so well versed. It talks about many different experiences of Black women, so there will be someone each night talking about a different experience. A different Black woman perspective to kind of lead the discussion each night after the show. The show is only 90 minutes. It's not even 90, it's like 80 minutes. So it's a really nice short production. And then, you know, 10 minutes of talk, you'll be in and out of there in about an hour and a half. And and you should, you know, you'll leave feeling full and seen.
Yeah, but I'm thinking the post production discussion would be extremely important for a performance like this, because you almost need to unpack in a community of other women who've experienced a lot of these things. It's just a validating kind of thing.
Exactly. Yes. That's absolutely what it is. Everybody is like up, and then we can sit down, and it's a breath. In the moment that we're in, right? Especially in the environment that we're in, where everything is so violent, everything is so oppressive, to be, you know, in this space where you can finally feel like it's safe to take a breath is important.
I was trying to figure out how I could see the production before I do my post-production discussion, but I don't think that's gonna be possible. So I'm gonna just sit with what, when I see it, I'm gonna see it. But I'm really looking forward to it. And can you give people the dates and how they can get tickets to the performance?
Sure. So the production runs from now through March 1st, Wednesday through Sunday. So Wednesday, we have 7 o'clock shows. I'm sorry, Wednesday and Thursday, we have a 7 p.m. show. Friday and Saturday, we have an 8 p.m. show. And Sunday, we have a 3 p.m. show. And then on Wednesday, the 25th, we have one more intergenerational matinee, which is at 10 a.m. Because I know some of our seniors do not want to be out here driving at night. So we have a 10 a.m. matinee on Wednesday, February 25th. Tickets on Wednesday, every Wednesday production we have, tickets are $20. That is our community price, where we like to make sure that they're accessible for people of any kind of income demographic. So you can come check us out on Wednesdays for $20. And then student tickets are $15. We have a senior and a military rate of $45 on every other night. And adult tickets are $50. And so anybody with a student ID can get the $15 ticket, but you have to show us, you have to present the student ID at the door. You can get tickets at www.theblackrep.org, or you can reach us by telephone at 314-534-3810. Our box office hours are 9 a.m. to 6 p.m., and we're available all the time online 24/7.
So one of the things, go ahead.
We also have, you can follow us on Facebook at St. Louis Black Repertory Company, or Instagram as STL Black Rep.
So I was going to say, one of the things that you all have done in the last few years, which I really like, is to do the flex tickets for a subscription, because sometimes you know you got a friend that came in town, and you can use all of your tickets at one time if you want. Talk about the categories of tickets so that people see that they can find something that fits their particular budget and their schedule.
Especially as we move, so we are now in our third production. So our subscriptions, so what we have now available for the rest of this season is the Flex Pass. The Flex Pass, you get 5 tickets. I think it's $225, I believe. And you can use that in any way for any performance. You just give us a call and let us know, I want to use my Flex Pass. And you have 5 tickets to use in any way you like to use them. You can use them all for one production. You can split them up between productions. You can use 2 for 1, 3 for another. You got one more by yourself. However you like to use it, you can use it. We offer a senior subscription and an adult subscription that we'll be announcing when we get ready to announce our 50th anniversary season, which we're very, very, very excited for. Ron has been tossing and turning up all night, going back and forth about making sure he has the perfect 50th season. And I think we got something in it for everybody, something that St. Louis has maybe never seen before, some things we might be able to see again. So we're super excited about that. And you can get a subscription for that. And your subscription guarantees you your same seats for every production. You come on the same night, you get the same seats, and then you get special subscriber perks, access to special talkbacks with creative people, the creative staff. You get discounted tickets, discounted merchandise. So we invite everybody to become a subscriber if that is something that is possible for you. And we have 3 more shows left after the Black Feminist Guide. We have Flying West, written by Pearl Klee. Black Feminist Guide, Flying West. Oh, Fat Ham, which is the final production. And then we have a special treat in our Phoenix Rising series, which is alternative programming, where we'll be doing August Wilson in Italian. So a Italian theater company will be coming in from Italy and performing a version of August Wilson's Jitney in Italian.
Wow. So I'm thinking, and this is often dangerous, I'm thinking that it ought to be a campaign from the end of this season up to the next one, that people who haven't bought a subscription need to say, that's my goal for the 50th anniversary, that I'm going to be part of the Black Rep experience. Because for me, I mean, I'm counting pennies like everybody else, but the thing that I'm going to be putting high on the priority list is my subscription to the Black Rep. Because it's not just supporting, but it's also the experience that you get. So it's a mutual thing. It's not like, oh, I just want to support that group. No, I am, but they're supporting me. So it's a mutual admiration society. But the tickets are very reasonable if you start looking at what people pay for other stuff. And so it has to be that you understand the importance of this, and that's going to be your sacrifice. It might mean that you don't get, you know, 5 lattes, you only get 2. So all of this, if we begin to make our culture a priority, because it's also in this political environment, it's also about saving and preserving the culture. Mm-hmm. And so we have a responsibility to do that. So I think there should be a big old campaign to say, we're trying to get this many subscribers by the 50th, and that people feel like they're gonna be a part of this huge, momentous historical occasion. So that's my thing I'm gonna be trying to do.
All right, and we love that, and I also want to uplift the fact that this is local artists. We do have out of town people, but for the most part, our cast members, our artistic staff, our creative staff, there are people who are from St. Louis or East St. Louis or Belleville or Old Fallon. It's local people that you're supporting, so you're not supporting some fancy New York person who doesn't live here. Right. We're supporting the local homegrown talent who are the people that are in our communities. And it's important to uplift and support that as well.
Right. Yeah. So I think one of the things we want to make sure that we do for people is to leave them with the fact that this is a premier production group that we have the responsibility of nurturing so that they survive past the 50. And I know you all have that young person's workshop group that you're trying to groom and train the next generation. And people could actually give to that. If you don't think you can support the Black Rep, you could say, I want to make a donation of $25 or $50 to those young people. So there's many ways you can support the Black Rep, but my thing is find a way. And if you got a new suggestion or a new way of doing that, I'm sure the Black Rep would be open to hearing whatever that is. I'm one of your fans, and I think I'm the number one fan. And anybody want to fight me about that, let's meet me on the corner of at Malacroix. Let me But yeah, so I just want to thank you for all that you all have done for this community and for joining us today, Heather, and talking about the Black Rep and getting us pumped up. I will see you tomorrow night at Sweetheart, not just because I love y'all, but I also love Sweetheart.
So, we love Sweetheart, right?
So when you get a chance to support a Black business. And so it's all good. It's going to be all good, all good. And then join me on February 28th for the production and for the post. I can't ever get that out because my buck teeth just get all those
post-production
discussion.
There you go.
Yeah, and we're going to have some fun doing that. But, you know, Black history is still going to be going on, and there's some Black history things that will be, I think, significant. For example, it's the ribbon cutting for the new Northside Movement Center. And this is pretty, pretty fantastic. You have two young organizations that come together. This will be their headquarters, but it's in a space that's going to be open to the community. The Northside Movement Center on February 27th. We'll be doing the ribbon cutting from 3:30 to 6:30. So come by, check out the space, check out what's being planned for this community. Lots of good things. And another production's coming up, The Brick and the Bible, which Bread and Roses is going to be doing this month. But here's the thing about the Black history component of that. This is history that many people don't know about. These are some sisters, and I say sisters because they organized a union at the Nut Factory that was totally exploited during the Depression, y'all. The Depression, they were organizing the union. You're going to pay us what? And then you got threats from here and there. You all better get your stuff straight. You know this is the Depression. We can get some more workers. These were some courageous sisters. So again, how theater brings you history to life. So that's coming up. And then next week, Local 24, the teachers union, is doing a summit. And I'll be talking about the Team 4 plan. So that's on the 18th at 6 p.m. at Vashon High School. So all of the stuff on the Black history that I've talked about will be on my website. So if I was moving too fast, you could still get that. But And there's other places. You go to the St. Louis Public Library. They always have a plethora of stuff to do. Go to the St. Louis American. They're going to be listing a lot of stuff for that's going to be going on. So, yeah, don't let Black History Month go by without partaking of some of the goodness and the and helping to lift up Black excellence during these very troubling times. So again, just want to thank you, Heather, for coming out, and I will see you tomorrow. I know that this is Jamala Rogers. I never can get that the outro music to do right. So I'm gonna leave that one alone. But this is Jamala, your host, and I will see you on the battlefield. Thank you for listening.